Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, June 6, 2019. Sudan's political parties meet to mediate the standoff between protesters and the junta in Khartoum.
Members of the Sudan's Popular Congress Party convened a meeting last evening to mediate between the Military Council and Declaration and Freedom Change and also the Sudan Professional Association.
And the African Union suspends Sudan from its activities.
And we hope that in the process, the violence will subside, prisoners will be released, and we get back to negotiations. I think the Council may want to reflect as what we do now, that the AUPSC have taken this major decision.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Sudanese political leaders are meeting in Khartoum to try to resolve the standoff between the junta of the military council and protesters. The junta announced it will resume negotiations with leaders of the pro-democracy protesters who have camped outside the military headquarters since April 6, demanding a civilian rule. As we hear from our reporter Mungu Ugali in Khartoum, the pro-democracy protesters have refused to sit down with the military leaders for talks amid a last-minute dash to prevent Sudan from sliding into anarchy.
There have been some numbers of meetings held by political parties in the last few hours to discuss the current situation in Sudan and to see how Sudan can come out from the situation where they are in now. The chairman of UMA Party, Sadiq al-Mahdi, called on all members of the Declaration of Freedom and Change Coalition for an urgent meeting to tackle ways of how the transitional period would be run. Also, members of the Sudan's Popular Congress Party convened a meeting last evening, and in one of their proposals, one of the suggestions they came up with is to mediate between the Military Council and Declaration and Freedom Change, and also the Sudan Professional Associations.
How powerful are these political parties who are trying to mediate? For instance, Sadiq al-Mahdi and the Popular People's Congress of late Dr. Hassan al-Turabi. How influential are these political parties?
Looking at the Sudanese political scene, even among Sudanese up to today, they regard Sadiq al-Mahdi as one of the leaders who would really have a say or would really mobilize like other political leaders across the country so that they are able to move away from this situation.
And how about news reaching us here that the African Union has suspended the membership of Sudan from all activities until a civilian-led government is formed? Is this what you're hearing in Khartoum?
Yes, that news has reached here, and this is the story now this evening here in Khartoum, that Sudan's membership from the AU has been suspended.
How about the issue of the SPLM North, Deputy Chairman Yasir Arman, who was arrested yesterday? Yasir came to Khartoum with around 8 other members of the SPLM North. Do you know what happened to the other 8 members?
Yeah, the SPLM North conveyed a meeting a few hours ago, and they have confirmed that Arman is missing, and they don't know his whereabouts. Even though they tried to ask security sources around, but the security were telling them they have no idea about where Arman is. So they say the military junta should take the full responsibility of the safety of Arman and other detainees as well.
Let's look at the situation in the towns, Omdurman, Khartoum, Khartoum North. Are these cities still under lockdown, or what is it like? What is life like in these three cities?
John, the situation remains the same. Roads are still closed, and protest is still continue across Khartoum, even Khartoum North and Omdurman, and even including other towns across the country. Markets remain also closed, and internet service, as you know, are still off, and people are unable to neither use social media nor access their sources of other news on internet. Practically, Khartoum remain as a ghost town, even though in some areas, like in Khartoum South or in the Eastern River Nile, there is a little bit of movement. People are now, you can see vehicle on the road, but going towards the downtown in Khartoum, where the main institutions and all, you only see heavy deployment of the security, but you can't really see a normal movement of civilians within the town.
That's VOA reporter Mungu Ugali speaking with me from the Sudanese capital Khartoum about efforts of political parties to end the standoff between the military junta and protesters. In New York, ahead of a United Nations Security Council meeting on Sudan, South Africa's ambassador to the UN, Jerry Mutajila, says his government supports the decision by the African Union Peace and Security Council to suspend Sudan from all activities. Mutajila says South Africa is calling on the parties to return to negotiations and agree on the transfer of power to a civilian rule as soon as possible.
Well, in the first place, the Sudan government aligned itself with the African Union Peace and Security Council decision to suspend Sudan. And again, the Sudan government, joining the AUPSC, is calling on all the parties to return back to the negotiation, very inclusive, and agree on the transfer of power to a civilian rule as soon as possible. And we hope that in the process, the violence will subside, prisoners will be released, and we get back to negotiations. I think the council may want to reflect as what we do now that the AUPSC have taken this major decision, which they suspended earlier on at the beginning of the violence. But I think because of the grave situation, this unfortunate development where over 100 people were killed, the AUPSC were forced by circumstances to take this decision in line with the AU decision not allowing this kind of behavior. So the council may have to reflect, and those countries for some time have been giving some form of comfort may have to reflect on what we do going forward.
Do you mean China and Russia?
Well, they are very substantial members of Security Council. So you will hear next, I hope there's going to be a discussion at some stage.
Will you be asking for a meeting of the African countries of the Security Council?
Well, I think the pen holder will ask. We have taken the decision as the A3 aligned to the AU. So the A3 aligned itself with the decision of the AUPSC.
There is some confusion, though, Ambassador, about who's leading the mediation. Whether at the UN we've got Funk Haysom, who's taking sort of a background role. Who's leading this mediation at the African Union?
Our understanding is that Funk Haysom is supporting the AU-led mediation efforts in Sudan. Our understanding is that Funk Haysom does coordinate his activities with those of the AUPSC or the AU chairperson and the Commissioner for Peace and Security. It is not against, it not. I think it's aligned in support to show the AU-UN cooperation in dealing with the conflicts of the continent.
That's South African Ambassador to the United Nations, Jerry Mutajila, answering questions from reporters at the UN headquarters in New York. The UK's Deputy Ambassador to the UN, Jonathan Allen, called the ongoing reports of intimidation and violence in Khartoum, quote, outrageous and unacceptable, and he said it must stop. As events in Sudan continue to unfold, two Sudan experts say there should be a push for women's right to be at the forefront of conversations amid talks of forming the country's next government. Sudanese independent researcher Samia El Nagar says women issues cannot take a back seat even as developments remain tensed and negotiations deadlocked.
Women have been at the majority of those protesting, but when Bashir was ousted, when the negotiations between the Declaration for Freedom of Change and the Military Council started, hardly any women were present. And those women that were present were representing political parties and and the political parties' agenda, not the women's rights agenda. So, of course, this has resulted in women mobilizing for a 50-50 representation. And they are quite angry with the exclusions, especially considering that they feel like they were the ones that ousted Bashir. The thanks they got was just not being able to be part of the negotiations.
How do you feel? How do you react to that?
You see, what Liv said was true, and it has been a concern for us. You see, why are we not at the table? Why we are predominating all the uprising activities. But what we did is that that was good for us because it made us open our eyes that maybe after the revolution, what will happen to us, as it happened in Egypt and in other countries, we will be forgotten, you see, and our contribution will not be recognized. So what we did is that we started asking for meeting with the people who are taking decision, with the negotiation group, and we managed to have at least one of young woman within the negotiation table. But that immediately we thought, no, we have to start, and that's an answer to your second question. We have to start to work. We have to start to prepare ourselves for the coming period. And therefore, immediately, several groups of women started to work for the 50-50 nomination of who will fill the posts in the coming government, Supreme Council, as well as the parliament. In addition, there's many groups, some women started to really draw attention to our specific women issue. It's the family law, it's the public order law, it is humiliating us. And so we started, putting our agenda very, very broad and in public. And some young girls are going and forming and talking about the feminists, about feminism, about feminist demands, feminist issues, you see. So that is what is happening.
That's Sudanese independent researcher Samia El Nagar and Eve Tenson, a research director at the CHR Michelsen Institute in Norway. They were speaking with my colleague Ayen Dengbior here in Washington yesterday. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Sudanese health workers are arrested. We will tell you why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
What stresses you out?
When I have so much to do and I end up procrastinating and leave everything the last minute, I end up being stressed out.
The economy that is really going to its end, we feel like we are finished. The economy is terrible and it's finishing me, it's stressing me.
I get stressed when I don't get my financial needs met.
Insecurity that we are facing here and there.
Too much work stresses me out, then sometimes boredom stresses me out.
Currently, I study 9 hours in a day, and that stresses me out.
When I have a lot of work in front of me, and also there is someone need also to disturbing me, telling me something also to be added, you know, I feel more stressed.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. 3 health workers from Adol Primary Healthcare Center have been arrested by national security agents in Western Lake States. The workers were arrested while transporting a wounded man suspected of killing a national security officer in Western Lake State. The Minister of Health in Western Lake State, Chol Osman, says the health workers have been released pending investigations.
They are not in the hand of national security. They freed them yesterday after they opened a police case because it was just they were detained for normal investigation, and now they were released.
They were helping to give lift to somebody who was wounded, and they were suspected of crime? Is that how it works?
There is a misunderstanding happened when they are helping that wounded guy. Because at the time that they were helping that wounded guy, there is a group of robbers whom also they expect that those guys will be among those wounded, the wounded one who is helped by the group from Adel. It's just a misunderstanding between them, and then we solve the issue. I myself, I enter into it, and I talk to them, and I've shown them.
Honorable Chol, how safe are health workers in South Sudan? Because this is not the first time we're hearing that health workers are being, you know, arrested or being harassed. These are just people who are doing work for humanity. Why would you arrest them?
You know, it depends sometimes. But for the safety of the health workers, I can talk in my state now. There is no any kind of any harassment or anything like that. It's just only this case it happened, but it is not intended to, for them to be detained in the national security. Yeah.
But my understanding is that the case has been handed over to the police. Then they are still in the custody of the police. Isn't that some sort of harassment?
After they make their investigation, because one of the national security personnel has passed away, has been shot dead, okay? That's why those of national security, they opened the case because they were thinking maybe those doctors, they have a communication with the suspected ones, which are not even caught or apprehended up to now. So they open a case, and even after the police do the investigation, they were released, those of ABL, PHCC, they were released because they are not even found whether they have any offense that they make. So the police released them through the attorney general. So now they are free. They are out from the police custody. And if there is a case and they are needed, like a witness, so they can be called again, and then they can give what they know about the case.
But instances where health workers are picked while they are on duty sends a wrong signal to other colleagues. I mean, this is intimidation.
You know, as I'm telling you, it's not they didn't intend to do that, to arrest them. But because the security in our state, it's an alarming issue, and also these interplanal problems, you know, that accelerate the this issue of security. It is the first time to happen in Lekki State.
So you're telling me this is the first time health workers are arrested in Lekki State. Is that correct?
Yes. This is the first time, and it will be the last time, because I've talked to the security organs, I've talked to those of national security, and we reach into a consensus about that.
And so what is your ministry doing to prevent this from happening in future? Because health workers are humanitarians. They are helping humanity. They are not supposed to be put in detention. Yeah. They are not supposed to be arrested.
No. Nobody will attempt it to do it again. Because if they have a case, they have to notify us as a ministry, and then we are the one to bring them if there is any investigation, if there is any kind of those things.
That's Chol Osman, Minister of Health in Western Lekki State. He was speaking with me from Rumbek Town earlier today. The director of the Al Sabah Children's Hospital in Juba is defending the hospital against accusations from parents who say negligence by health workers at the facility caused the deaths of several children. The hospital's executive director says people have wrongly portrayed Al-Sabah Hospital as a place that is not sympathetic to patients. Ding Magot has more for VOA from Juba.
In the latest incident at Al-Sabah Children's Hospital, Peter Madol, who brought his 8-month-old baby to the hospital, says a doctor at Yafa Clinic referred him to Al-Sabah on May 1st after his child was diagnosed with sepsis, a bacterial infection in a person's blood. Madol says his baby died at Al-Sabah Hospital nearly 3 weeks ago after the staff switched off the generator that was powering the oxygen concentrator to support the baby's breathing.
So we went there on the 1st of May, and the kid was in the hospital from 1st, and he was undergoing medication and having some food supplements. And on 1st until the 15th, at 12 o'clock, midnight, when he developed difficulty in breathing, then he was given an oxygen up to 2 o'clock. Yeah, then at 12, he developed a difficulty in breathing. The nurses who were on duty put him on oxygen. There was no doctor around. And up to almost 2 o'clock, then they switched off a generator. And we had to wait beside the baby and wish him that.
Madol says the whole experience was gut-wrenching.
There was nobody, even when the kid was dying, after they put the baby on oxygen, the nurses went to their room to sleep. So when the kid was dying, you go knock and nobody could come out to you. So I had to disconnect the oxygen. No nurse was there for us. I had to disconnect the oxygen and go away with the remains of my kid. Nobody was there.
Dr. Felix Nyugura, executive director of Al-Sabah, denies the hospital is to blame for the child's death.
What they have said in the media, I think, is not correct. That is not the right way of saying it, because we don't have a way of cutting the power, because if the power is for giving oxygen for a child, definitely we cannot cut the power intentionally. That is wrong. Secondly, we have two sources of oxygen. The other one is powered by oxygen by generator, and the other one is oxygen in cylinders. So I don't know what that man is, the father of deceased, is talking about.
Madol says he's not decided on whether to take legal action against the hospital since he is still mourning the death of his baby. In the meantime, he is urging hospital administrators to improve services so that other children do not die in their care.
It's not about my son anymore. It's about other South Sudanese who will still undergo the same situation. Because before my son, during my 12 days in the hospital, I've seen horrible things happening to other kids, and they were dying. They died. So if my son followed, it's sure thing that other kids will also follow.
While denying culpability, Nyungura apologized to all parents who feel their children died due to inaction or actions of the hospital staff.
I'm sorry for what has happened to the family. But if there is anything which happened in the hospital here, you come to the administration. You narrate your problem. And then we shall be able to answer them.
For VOA News, I'm Ding Magot in Juba.
Residents and government officials say a new European Union-funded bridge near Gogrial state capital Kwajok will help improve delivery of basic services across the state. Wake Simon Wudu traveled with WFP to Kwajok on Tuesday and has this report.
Dozens of women ululate as they celebrate the official opening of the new bridge built on the Jur River in Kwajok, connecting Gogrial state to Tony and Wau states. Officials and residents say up until now it has always been difficult, even trekkers at times, to cross the Jur River to deliver goods or services. 74-year-old Gogrial State Kwajok resident Mayot Akeni says it took half the day to arrive in Tonya from Kwajok.
Before launching of this bridge, it can take you 5 hours because the roads are not good. But now, if you go up to Warab, will take you 1.5 hours. So has made the road, the distance very short.
He says the new bridge means traders can expand their reach and cattle keepers will have much easier time.
To the people of Barakzal, there will be a lot of benefits. Yeah, and especially trading. Trading, the cars will be moving freely, crossing the river, through the bridge, and then also will benefit this area by crossing with their animals. Either you take them to Tonj or you bring them to Kwajuk or you take them to the north, then they will benefit it a lot because financially people will benefit.
Before the new bridge was built, school children and other travelers had to pay at least 50 South Sudanese pounds one way to cross the river by a canoe, which often affected school attendance during the rainy season when the river is high. Speaking in Arabic, 32-year-old Kwajok resident Nyani Yai, a mother of six, says the new bridge is a precious gift to their community.
There are other people staying on the other side of the river. When the river gets full, they cannot manage to cross and come to the big hospital. But now a sick person can cross and come to the big hospital in Kwajok. Even goods and services can now be easily transported out to other states. Before this bridge, it was difficult for an ambulance to rush a patient to the hospital. But now this is being solved.
Akeni says in the past, many people drowned while trying to cross the river.
It is a good thing to construct this bridge across the river. It is very nice because most of our people have lost their lives. When the river is full, they cross by canoes, and most of the people have died with their materials and sometimes with their animals.
Gok Real Estate Governor Victor Atem says people's lives are changing for the better now that they can cross the bridge.
The bridge will help in delivery of the most needed goods and services to the vulnerable communities on the other side of the river, for instance. Ambulance can now rush a patient from Lianum and other areas of Greater Gorialis to Kwajok State Hospital within 1 hour, which was not possible by then. Hence, save the lives that are always lost by risk of crossing the river when it is overflooded.
Aside from faster delivery of health care services, Governor Atem says education and security should improve in the area. Ronald Sibanda, the UN's World Food Programme country representative for South Sudan, says the new bridge will enable aid agencies to deliver humanitarian assistance more cost-effectively to this area of Bir El Ghazal, which had been at the center of hunger spikes for years.
The bridge link will also provide all-year-round movement of goods and people and lays a strong foundation for the economic growth of the region.
The bridge is part of the EU's $20 million project aimed at improving road infrastructure. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Inama by Diamond featuring Fally Ipupa. I'm John Tanza in Washington. We are glad you could be here. Remember to join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Je t'aime.